We see here that Moses has a big job to do, and that job is to stand, if you will, in the Lord's stead, if I could say it that way, to be a mouthpiece, to be hands, feet, to be a leader, and to follow what God tells him to do to get the children of Israel
from bondage and slavery out of that and get them all the way to where they reach the promised land, the land of Canaan, the land that God had given to them for an inheritance. But between what they came out of and what they're going to get to, there was a wilderness. There was difficulties. There were trials and tribulations. There were hardships. There was hunger. There was weariness. There was temptation, if you will, in the wilderness. But they had to get through the wilderness to get to the promised land. And so Moses is trying to get them there. He did not ask for the job. He never wanted the job. He argued with God against being the leader of these people because he said, "Who am I that I should do this? I'm not qualified. I don't deserve to be chosen by you to do this." But God said, "Moses, you're the man." Now, Moses, that did not give Moses any kind of a license, if you will, to climb up on top of a pedestal and say, "Look who I am." You know, I'm just saying that it's sad to see that in much of the religious circles, we see men who work to lift themselves up, and almost as if you have to bow down to them instead of to God, you know? Well, what happens a lot of times is those men who perhaps, if their heart is not pure before God and they're in it for other reasons, fame, fortune, whatever the case is, and notoriety and power, feeling of power over people. Well, what happens then is there comes a point where they fall. The Bible says that pride goeth before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. And God does not like pride. In fact, it's pretty clear in the Bible that he hates pride, and yet we all have it in us. So we see that sometimes when men may aspire to become something well-known and great, what happens is that there's a fall coming if it's not chosen by God and if God has not put them in that place. I have seen it over and over. And so what happens is then if these men fall, many times it's a moral failure, or it could be other things. Whenever they fall, suddenly now it causes a tainting or a question mark, if you will, upon other leaders who God has said, "You are to lead my people. They're not your people, so you better treat them right, but you've got to be stern sometimes when you need to be stern. You've got to speak the truth sometimes when they don't want to hear it, but do it in love. These are my people, and I called you to be strong. I called you to be a leader, and I called you to take my people to where I'm trying to get them, to the promised land, to heaven." And so what happens a lot of times is because there are men who are money hungry, power hungry, etc., and then we see how they abuse that, it can shift over, and that can be labeled, if you will, or attributed to other men of God who many of them didn't ask for the position, they didn't ask to be where they are, they didn't ask to be in the front limelight, anything, but God has placed a mantle on them. God has placed a burden on them. God has said, "I, my people, and here's what you're going to do." It's a big calling. It's a big weight. It's a big burden, as we all know, and many of you, even within things that God has called you into, whatever that may be, it is a burden. It's a weight. I'm sure you understand what I'm saying. When God calls us into something, it's not just peaches and ice cream. It's weighty. It's a burden. It is a duty. It's a responsibility. It is, as one preacher put it, he described it as the bitter pill of anointing. And this is what we're talking about with this man, Moses. Moses never asked for it. He never aspired to do this well. When he was younger, I believe he knew the calling was on him, and he stepped out too soon and tried to take action, thinking, hey, I got this. Well, he didn't have it, and he had to go for 40 years and get humbled and learn how to lead God's people. So he's leading the children of Israel. He's leading them through the wilderness, and there came a place in this setting that we're looking at where there were some men that rose up. Korah was of the Levitical tribe. Now, the Levites, which were the sons of Levi, they were the ones chosen for the consecrated priesthood duties. And so, when you look at the tabernacle, and when men came and brought their offering to the tabernacle, not just any of the people of the congregation of Israel, the other 11 tribes, not just anyone could come in, grab their animal sacrifice, march right in to the church, if I could put it that way. Just march right in the church, march right up, and get into the holiest of holies and start talking to God. They'd be killed, dead, gone. Because God had a certain structure that he wanted things done. And that's something that we struggle with, especially in our modern age here, perhaps it's always been, that we struggle with the idea of a structure in God's kingdom that we have to conform to. We don't like that. We don't like it. If I want to drive 85 miles an hour, I don't like the idea that there's a policeman that's going to pull me over, because there is a justice system with rules that says you can't go over a certain speed. Well, I think I ought to be able to. I don't see any problem with it. It's safe out here, and I want to do it. Well, the policeman, or policewoman, police person, whatever is proper today, that the police person is going to write us a citation. Yeah. We're going to go and stand to fight it. We're going to stand before the judge. And he says, are you aware that you were speeding and that's why you're here? Yes, Your Honor. Do you have anything to say about it? Yes. I think I have a right to drive however I feel safe to drive. Uh-oh. Well, for some reason, we understand the socialist. That might have been a Freudian slip, but the justice system that we have that has rules and structure, we understand that, hey, if you go speeding too fast, if you go through the red light, you get a ticket, and you've got to pay your price. But when it comes to God's judicial system, if you will, and God's organizational system, we don't always like it. We don't like being told what to do. That's just how we are. It's our nature. And that's what these men were doing. Here's Korah, who is of the Levitical tribe that were chosen as separated to be the priesthood. The other 11 tribes were to go and inherit the land and to fight and to conquer and so forth. But the priesthood was to minister before the Lord. And so Korah is one of the ministering tribes people, if you will. And here we see that he got together with two other men from the tribe of Reuben, Dathan and Abiram, and they grabbed a bunch of other men, 250 princes of Israel. These weren't just people. They went for the people that were well known in the congregation. Men of renown. Can I say that the enemy, if he's going to get something done, he's always going to go and try to convince and pull the ones who have the most influence. That's why I say we've got to keep prayed up. We got to keep fasting. We got to keep our body and our mind under subjection, because we have influence over people. Our families or our friends, who our neighbors. We may not feel like it. We may think, I'm an island. I can do whatever I want. It won't impact anybody else. Oh, yes, it will. And the devil's got his eye on us. And he says, if I can get to them and pull them and turn them away from God, then their influence could cause others to go spiraling out of control. And I'll get them all. That's how he works. And so Korah gets together with these other two men of Reuben, and they get a bunch of other men together, And they all came and gathered together in a mob mentality. Anybody ever seen that? So funny when we get these riots and things. Not funny, I don't mean funny. It's peculiar, maybe it's a better word to say. That we have all these riots that where, you know, people will band together and they'll stand against the police, or they'll stand against some other entity or some other form of rule, if you will. And they get together in a mob and they fight. But you stop and say, hey, listen, Joe, we're all going to go home and eat lunch. You stand here, you go ahead and keep fighting by yourself. Joe ain't going to stay there. If he doesn't have his mob, he's not going to do it. And the mob mentality, in my opinion, is a cowardly mentality. What happened, as we heard last Sunday, what happened to the Davids of the world that says, I don't need a mob to win. I'm going to stand up for what's right. No matter if anybody stands with me or not, I'm going to stand for what's right. That's being a true patriot, if you could call it that. But this mob mentality is because I want to hide and I want to blend in. I don't want anybody to know who I am, but we together are going to overthrow. And that's what they were doing. They came up with this mob mentality before Moses and Aaron, and they said, you know what? You guys are too big for your britches. You think you are really something. You think you are the only ones that are holy and anointed before the Lord. Don't you know that the whole congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them? So why are you lifting up yourselves above the congregation of the Lord? Who do you think you are? You know, this isn't the first time. It's in this chapter 2 and 14. We read where Moses had stepped in and tried to defend one of his Hebrew brethren, and because they were quarreling, and they said, who do you think you are? Who made you a prince and a judge over us? That's the first time. Then the second time we see was in Exodus chapter 15 and verse 23. We find where the children of Israel had just been delivered from slavery, just watched a miraculous victory of the Pharaoh army coming through the Red Sea. Their chariot wheels came up. The waters covered them, and now they didn't have their enemy chase them anymore. Miracles! Miracles! And when they came to Marah, they could not drink of the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name of it was called Marah. And in verse 24, and the people murmured against Moses, saying, what shall we drink? He had to cry out to the Lord. You see, what happens here is the people are murmuring to Moses. They are getting together in a little murmur mob. There's a little murmur mob developing, and they're starting talking about this guy who drags us out here into the desert, and we don't have anything to drink. He thinks that he is our boss, and now he's like a dictator over us. He came out here to kill us. No. The Lord got angry, and the Lord said, listen, Moses, you're going to throw in such and such plant material, and that water is going to become sweet. And it did. You know, it would seem to me, they'd already seen all these miracles that God had done, and now all of a sudden, the people start murmuring against Moses and saying, who do you think you are? And all of a sudden now, the water that was bitter becomes sweet, and I drink it. You would think that would have cemented in my mind and in my heart a determination that I'm never going to murmur against Moses again. I'm never going to come against the man of God again, because now I realize that, you know, Moses is just a man. He's just flesh. He's just bone. He's just blood. He's no better than anybody else, but he happens to be the one that God has chosen to lead the people. And so therefore, if he is God's man, then I'm going to respect the God in the man, and I'm going to show respect to the man, and I'm never going to murmur against him again. But they didn't do that. Oh my, they didn't do it. We see again in Numbers chapter 12 and verse 1. This is just a few chapters back from what we were reading a few minutes ago. We see that Miriam and Aaron, these are Moses' brothers and sister, his brother and his sister, they spake against Moses because of
the Ethiopian woman, which he had married. He had married an Ethiopian woman. So now they're starting to say, aha, we don't know if he's really qualified for this position because of his past. You see, Moses married her when he was on the backside of the desert 40 years over there. Had he stayed in Egypt around his Hebrew people, he probably would have married a Hebrew woman, but he was on the backside of the desert, and Jethro's father-in-law took him in, and he worked for Jethro and kept his flock, and Moses had, I think, given up on his calling, probably. And so on the backside of the desert for 40 years, he marries a woman, has a couple of children. And Moses, or Aaron and Miriam got together and saying, hey, our brother, you know, he's the boss here in our little adventure, in our little escapade, and we're just not real sure that
he needs to be the only one telling everybody what to do. And they came against Moses and they murmured, and they said, has the Lord indeed spoken only by Moses? Has he not spoken also by us? And the Lord heard it. Isn't it so funny how when we do things wrong, we try to hide it from God? Isn't that crazy? You know, people start, you know, getting into stuff they're not supposed to and doing stuff they're not supposed to do. And the first thing they do is stop coming to church because they don't want God to, you know, see it. Well, that's not exactly what they're thinking, but it's what they're doing. Why would I quit coming to church if that's where my help is? Why would I not keep coming to church if God is there? He already knows what you did last night in secret. He already knows what you did last week that nobody else saw. He knows it all, so why would we hide from it? That's just the way we are. And so they said, the Lord heard it, and it says, Moses was very meek above all the men that were upon the face of the earth, and he came after, in fact, let me just read a couple more verses. I don't want to take too much time. Let me drop down to verse 4. And the Lord spake suddenly unto Moses and unto Aaron and unto Miriam, come ye three out unto the tabernacle of the congregation. So they all came out. And the Lord came down on the pillar of the cloud, stood in the door of the tabernacle, and called Aaron and Miriam. And they both came forth. And he said, hear now my words. If there be a prophet among you, I, the Lord, will make myself known unto him in a vision. Let me drop down to verse 8. With Moses will I speak mouth to mouth, even apparently or clearly, and not in dark speeches. And the similitude of the Lord shall he behold. Where? I'm afraid he's talking to Miriam and Aaron. He said, so were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? And the anger of the Lord was kindled against him, and he departed, and the cloud departed from off the tabernacle. And behold, Miriam became leprous, white as snow. And Aaron looked upon Miriam, and behold, she was leprous. And Aaron said unto Moses, alas, my Lord, I beseech thee, I pray, lay not the sin upon us wherein we have done foolishly and wherein we have sinned. We see that Moses is getting hit several times by those who are telling him, who do you think you are? But every time, Moses has had to stand, and God has come in and defended Moses. Then we get to where we are, where we begin in chapter 16 today. Now all of a sudden we've got Korah, Dathan and Abiram, 250 princes, well-known high office princes, if you will, gathered against Moses, saying, who do you think you are? Why are you lifting yourselves up above the congregation of the Lord? Now, Moses actually proposed a test. And he said, I want you all to take censers, and God's going to determine who really belongs in the priesthood. Not because somebody's better than the other one. That has nothing. Can I tell you? If God was going to choose someone that was qualified, sinless, perfect, Jesus Christ was the only one. The rest of us are nothing but a lousy bunch of lousy, rotten, no good for nothing sinners that he has cleaned up, washed our sins away, and set us on the rock to stay. And then when he begins to give us gifts, there are gifts of the Spirit, nine gifts of the Spirit. There is fruit of the Spirit, which is manifested because of our of him dwelling within us. And there are offices or positions or certain responsibilities that he places on certain people. He calls them to that. But I don't care how famous, I don't care how amazing they are in their ministry, they're no better than any of the listeners that they see. Now they may not have a tendency to do certain things. You know, if a preacher's working with a drug addict, he may not struggle with drugs. That may never have been something he struggled with. But I promise you, the preacher struggles with something. I promise you, the preacher's flesh has got something that his hang up. And it's important for leadership to always remember that we are not better than anyone else. We are simply called to do what God has called us to do. And if we are to do it faithfully and properly, we have to do it with the level of authority or the level of passion or whatever the case is in what we're trying to do that God gives to us. But it doesn't make us any better. However, when they came against Moses, who was an imperfect man, we see that Moses said, okay, we're going to do a test. We're going to see who shows up. In verse 8, Moses said unto Korah, here I pray you, seemeth it but a small thing unto you? In other words, you think it's just nothing that the God of Israel has already separated you from the congregation of Israel? You're one of the Levites to bring you near to do the service of the tabernacle, Lord, near to himself, and to stand before the congregation to minister them. He hath brought you near to him, and all your brethren, the sons of Levi, with you. And you want the priesthood also? You're not happy with the calling that God has put you in? He's already brought you near to him, and you want more? You're not happy because somebody else is appearing to get the glory? It's interesting that we see that Korah already had a ministry that had been divinely appointed. But his mistake was in attempting to determine the ministry of somebody else. Isn't that how it always works? The one that's above him. I've seen it so often, heard it so often, and I've been around it all growing up in my life. Men, in fact, there's one very dear to me. But he
felt like, you know, God's calling me away. God's calling me into ministry, and I'm really, what it was is he was very unhappy with some of the things that the preacher was preaching it straight, and he didn't like that too much. And so he said, "Well, I think God's calling me somewhere else." And so he wanted to move, and anyways, he ended up moving, and everything crashed, and he came back and had a lot of trouble in his life. I'm thinking of another man who is still alive right now, and I love him, but trying my best not to cast any judgment, because who am I? Because I have plenty of things in my life that God has had to correct. But just looking at this particular person who came to the pastor and said, God has called me to go and preach. And the pastor said, you know, brother, I don't feel it's the right time. I don't feel like that's right. I think you're supposed to just, you know, supposed to stay here and keep helping. And the man didn't like that. He thought, you're just trying to be iron-fisted. You're just trying to, you know, you're trying to keep me from what God wants me to do. And so he said, I'm out of here. So he got everything all together and hit the road, took off, and it didn't work out. Life crashed. He ended up coming back home empty-handed. Can I say that? And the stories abound. You know, there's many men that God has called into a certain position or to go a certain place and do a certain thing. And when the Lord is with them, it's powerful. But oh, when we take off and we say, you know what, God's called me to be an evangelist. And if it's not the will of God, ain't going to be a good thing. It's just the way it is. Because we feel like we want to go, but not sin. And that's what I find so many times in mankind, in all of us. There was some time years ago that I really, really, really wanted to depart from our beautiful, wonderful state. Anyways, I'll leave that word right there. I won't say much more about it. I love it. We got a beautiful state. The boys are never messed up, and it's got some messed up ideas. And so I really wanted to move and take my family elsewhere. But I will tell you that I had seen these other men that had tried these things, and it was out of the will of God. And the man of God told him, said, I'm telling you, it's going to be shipwreck because God's not sending you. You're sending yourself. And I had seen this. I'd witnessed it. And something in me just said, I can't take a chance doing the wrong thing. So you pray. You seek God. And I did that. And seemingly wasn't really getting any answers. And so I finally learned that when I pray about doing something, going or doing, and God doesn't give an answer yet, then I better sit still and wait. Because if I go ahead and go or do, then I'm going to see heartache and problems or shipwreck. And so I thankfully had observed this and learned it. So I waited. And I remember a particular point in time to where I kept saying, Lord, I don't see why I'm here, nothing going on, and I don't understand. But there was a day when all of a sudden I had this peace. And God said, you are right where you're supposed to be. I'm telling you, it took a lot of prayer because I had to really get over my will. That's the problem. My will wanted something different than what God wanted for me. But then whenever God finally was able to get
aligned into submission to his will, now he said, you're going to be all right now. You just stay in submission to my will and you'll be all right. You get out of my will and you won't be all right. And I have learned that, and I'm so and so we see that these men they got out of submission. And in fact, Paul even wrote about it in Romans 13:1, let every soul be subject unto the higher powers. He had to remind the church of that. Moses described Korah's ministry as a Levite before he rebuked him for stepping out of his place. And it's interesting that even though Moses does not directly state the source or the motivation of Korah's rebellion, Psalms 106:16 reveals that the source of Korah's rebellion was deep jealousy. Psalms tells us that they envied Moses and Aaron. And that is so like the devil to try to trip us up by envying somebody else. Oh, they got a new car. Oh, wow. That just doesn't seem fair, Lord. I know how they live. They don't deserve that new car. And you know how I live. I'm living straight. And you ain't giving me any. I'm using that word ain't a lot. My mom's a grammatical English major almost. And she listens to this message, I'm in trouble. Well, let me see if I can say that you've not given me a car like that. Here I am. They're blessed and they're evil in their ways. And look at me. I don't have nothing. I don't have anything. Except trying to get better. I don't have anything except this old jalopy. In fact, I'm concerned that one of these days it's falling apart so bad that I'm concerned one of these days I'm going to be driving and the wheels are going to stop and I'm going to keep on bouncing down the road in the cab and the wheels are going to be back there. It's such a jalopy. God, I don't understand it. That makes sense to me. Why are you blessing so many other people? It's envy. It's jealousy. It's something that is in human nature. Something else that's interesting, when we look at verse 12, and Moses sent to call those other two conspirators, Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab. And they said, we're not coming. He said, go get Dathan and Eliab. Tell them to come here too. I just talked to Korah. You. They said, we're not coming. In fact, they sent the message. They said, is it a small
part of a land that floweth with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness? They weren't in a land that flowed with milk and honey. They were in slavery. They had known slavery where they came from. They had been slaves in the time that they were back in slavery. It where they came from was not milk and honey. And they said, you're going to call us up out of a land that flows with milk and honey? and call us into the wilderness? Do you think that's just, that doesn't mean anything? Do you think it's just a little thing? And in even more so, you try to make yourself a prince over us, Moses. Will you not put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up. They said we're just not going to listen. And it's interesting when we look at what has happened in what these men are talking about. Their bitterness drove them to make these accusations against Moses. And they didn't have any regard for God's judgment. They forgot how God had judged others. We see during the journey how God's judgment had come out in his wrath. And bitterness drove them to be completely blinded by that. In verse 19, I want to drop down to verse 19. And Korah gathered all the congregation against them under the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and the glory of the Lord appeared unto all the congregation. Now Korah says, "Hey, we'll get everybody in force. We'll get them all here, and we're gonna get together." And when they did, the glory of the Lord showed up. You know, I would think, it would seem like in my little mind here, it would seem that if I banded all these men together and got all this mob together and I showed up at the congregation, right there at the door of the congregation, and the glory of the Lord appeared in that congregation, then I would fall on my face and suddenly say, "Oh my, I must be doing something wrong here, because I came to come against, and all of a sudden the glory of the Lord is appearing in defense of the man that I'm coming against." You would think that would have driven them right then to a state of humility and realizing they were wrong and repentance. But envy and jealousy and bitterness and rebellion is strong. And so we see the Lord spoke to Moses and said, "Separate yourselves, Moses and Aaron, separate yourselves from among this congregation. I'm going to consume them in a moment." And these two men who were being attacked or discredited by the by this mob, this congregational mob here, Moses and Aaron fell on their faces and said, "Oh God, the God of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin and will you be wroth with all the congregation?" Let me just say that when we think that the preacher, pastor, leader, that he's just, you know, "You can do this and you can't do that, and you can do this, you can't do that." Can I tell you that if he's a real man of God, if he's a real man of God, I mean a real man of God, you know what he's doing? He's spending some time on his face before God saying, "Oh God, would you save souls? God, there's people that I'm going to be talking to this Sunday. There's somebody that needs to hear from you, and God, don't let it be my autonomy. Don't let it be just from my great mind in my own heart, but let it be from you. Let it be from your heart to reach." And it'll be on his face, and he'll be seeking and interceding for the people. And when God impresses upon him, as God does in the middle of the night, and says, "Listen, I'm going to trouble your heart over so-and-so. There's a brother, a sister in the church, and I'm going to trouble your heart because they're in a bad place and they need some prayer." Sometimes God will reveal it. Sometimes he doesn't. But he troubles the heart of the pastor and he says, "You need to start praying for that person." And that pastor, if he's a real man of God, he won't be able to sleep. He'll start praying and seeking God and interceding for that person. I'm telling you, if it's a real man of God, we ought to thank God for our men of God. I've got a pastor. I'll just tell you right now, this pastor has a pastor. And I thank God all the time for my pastor because I need him in my life, because he can see things that I can't see. And I need God to use him to steer me and get me right. I need it. I've got to have it. These men, these two men, Moses and Aaron, they fell on their faces and they interceded for the congregation and said, "Oh God, don't destroy them all. There's one man that sinned right here, but don't destroy them all." And we see that in verse 23, "And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, I want you to speak unto the congregation, and I want you to tell them, get up from about the tabernacle of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram,
Get away from him. Everybody that's not involved, get away. So Moses rose up and he went unto Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. And he spake unto the congregation, saying, listen, depart, I pray you, from the tents of these wicked men, and don't touch anything of theirs, because you will be consumed in all of their sins. So the congregation got up from Korah, Dathan, and Abiram on every side. And Dathan and Abiram came out of their tents. Remember they said, we're not going up. We're not going to go. We're not going to meet. We're not going to answer Moses. Who does he think he is? Well, the Lord knows how to knock on our door. So they came out. Dathan and Abiram, they came out and they stood in the door of their tents with their wives, their sons, their little children. And Moses told them, he said, now you're going to know that the Lord has sent me to do all these works, because I've not done them of my own mind. I didn't choose what to do. I'm only doing what God has told me to do. That's what he told them. Can I say that rebellion spreads like a disease. When someone gets rebellion in their heart, it has been my observation and experience, without fail, they're going to try to get partners. They're going to try to pull somebody else in, and usually they're going to go after those with a lot of influence. And they're going to try to get somebody on their team, and they're going to try to develop a mob. Now, it may not be a physical, visible mob that comes physically and visibly and challenges the pastor, the leader. It may not be a visible, but they're going to get on Facebook or Instagram. They're going to get in text messages and phone calls, and they're going to whisper and murmur against the man of God. They're going to just try. That rebellious spirit is one of the deadliest spirits that there is. A lying spirit, a rebellious spirit, are some of the worst and most venomous serpents, if I could put it that way. And so we see that in verse 31, came to pass when Moses got done speaking, that the ground underneath these wicked men, it opened up the ground that was under them, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up, and their houses, and all the men that appertained or were in cahoots with Korah, and all their goods, they and all that appertained to them, went down alive into the pit, and the earth closed upon them, and they perished from among the congregation. And all Israel that were round about them fled at the cry of them, for they said, lest the earth swallow us up also. And then there came out a fire from the Lord and consumed those 250 men, those princes, those well-renowned men. You know who they are? Yeah, they're dead men. They just got burnt to a crisp. They're no longer, because the fire of the Lord has come out against them. And we see that the Lord spoke unto Moses and began to tell him, I want you to do this and this. So we drop down to verse 41. After all this happened, I mean, this verse here just blows my mind. After all that had happened, on the morrow, the next day, all the congregation of Israel, the children of Israel, murmured against Moses and against Aaron, saying, you've killed the people of the Lord. I'm telling you, it just amazes me that there's something within us that when we get a little bit of that rebellious spirit start creeping on us, it just comes through like a cancer. It doesn't stop. Verse 44, the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, get you up from among this congregation. I'm going to consume them in a moment, just like he did before. And they fell on their faces again. Now, they could have said, yes, Lord, I'll get out of the way, consume them, because I'm tired of messing with them. Instead, they got down and interceded again. And they said, Moses said to Aaron, hey, hurry, take a censer, put fire from off the altar, put on incense, and go quickly into the congregation and make an atonement for them. For there is wrath gone out from the Lord. The plague has begun. And Aaron took as Moses commanded and ran. He was hurrying.
Moses and Aaron knew what was coming. The people were in trouble. And Aaron ran into the midst of the congregation. And behold, the plague was begun upon the people. And he put on incense and made an atonement for the people. And the Bible says he stood between the dead and the living. Here's the plague, like a wave sweeping through. God's taking judgment over the rest of these that had murmured against Moses. And the plague is starting. But there's still these people over here that are living. And Aaron stood between the living and the dead. And the plague was stopped because of his intercession. And the Lord said, let me just finish out with verse 49. Now, they that died in the plague, listen to this. They that died in that plague, and it was spreading like wildfire, but before it was stopped, 14,700, in addition to all those that died with Korah, and Dathan, and Abiram. Can I tell you that God has dealt with my heart? Quite honestly, I don't know. I don't really know why he gave me this message today. The only thing he gives me the message is heavy on my heart. I said I won't preach it. Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do with this message today. I don't know who it's for. It could be somebody online. I don't know. But I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do with this message today. I'm going to humble myself even more. And I'm going to say, God, would you put people in my life that do tell me what to do? Because I don't know everything that I need to do. I need you to talk to me. But God, as much as I'd love for you just to show up and we'll run down to Starbucks and have a coffee together and you can tell me to do whatever, if you tell me to stand on my head, if you tell me to go climb the highest mountain, if you tell me to go do this or that or start a work, I'll do it, Lord, or do anything. But Lord, you're not going to just show up here and talk to me. That's not how you operate. What you're going to do is you're going to take men that are flawed. They're human. They are not perfect. They make mistakes. You're going to take those men and you're going to use them as a mouthpiece. And you're going to talk to me. And you're going to show me the ways that I need to adjust as I close. You're going to show me the ways that my life needs to be maneuvered here and there. I may not understand it all. I may not agree with it all. I may not see it all. But God, would you please give me a preacher that will look down my row and say, listen, I'm on my face for you. I don't want you to go to hell. I don't want you to be lost. I'm here to intercede for you. And you better watch out. There's trouble ahead. Just this morning, early morning, I got a text from a good friend of mine, preacher, and his dad was a great man of God, great man of God, and his dad has been running from God. His dad is in a lot of trouble right now. I met his dad years ago, and there was something that connected when I met with his dad. His dad had gotten back into church, cleaned up, and was doing good. And I met his dad, and his dad there was something about it. I just loved him instantly, and we prayed together. We stood and we shouted together in a church service. We worshiped the Lord together, and it was wonderful. And I knew this man's testimony, how he'd come back in and been delivered. After that, I found out.
Change me, Lord.
He said, yeah, my dad, he slipped away again. This is what he told me. He said it was a trick of the devil. He said it was a trick of the devil. I remember thinking, that's how the devil always works. It's a trick. He always does something to cause us to say, oh, well, that's not right. Oh, well, you just say, it's a trick of the devil. But this particular man, this man that I love very much, praying for him right now, whenever somebody asked him, back when he backslid first time, they asked him, they said, how did it happen? How'd you get away from how did you get back out so messed up? You were a preacher. You had an impact for God. You did great things for God. How did it happen? How did you get there? He said, I quit praying.
I quit praying. I used to pray every day, all the time. And I just quit praying. And before I knew it, I cooled off and then got cold and then straight. And I remember the impact that had on me when I heard that. I thought, oh God, whatever you have to do to me, don't let me stop praying. Because I know this old flesh. I know this old flesh too well. It won't be long before I'll be slipping and sliding back into what I came from. God, whatever you have to do, give me a preacher that's going to look out for me and talk to me. And God, help me to keep on praying. As we stand, every eye is closed, every head is bowed.